Welcome. So we're in the season of Easter, which is the 7 weeks after the resurrection. And we're going to be, this is kind of the time where we're looking for small signs of new life as we await the outpouring of God's Spirit. And today we're going to explore how we can receive guidance into spaces of new life. So I have a question for us to kind of reflect on and maybe chat with someone next to you. Is when have you experienced meaningful leadership or guidance in your journey? Okay, so it might be a person, or it could have been an experience or a group. But yeah, go ahead and think for a minute if there's someone or some experience where you felt like you received some guidance or some leadership that was meaningful, and just chat with the person next to you. Okay. So how many had trouble thinking of anything? so not too many. I wanted to acknowledge, too, maybe, you know, it's not uncommon to not have had many experiences of meaningful guidance or leadership. So if that's your experience, that's also valid. I remember when we, my family and I first started coming to Vox about 7 years ago, I think for the first 3 weeks, we sat over there, and I think my wife and I just cried, like, mostly during the worship, thanks to Harmon, and God, I'm sure. But I couldn't figure out who the pastors were either. I don't know if you've had that experience. Like, there was just someone speaking differently every week, and I was like, who's in charge here? And I kind of liked that. I thought, wow, this is pretty awesome. And I think after probably about 2 or 3 months, Gideon and I connected and went to lunch. And I had some questions. I remember asking him, like, how is it so good and safe? And he kind of replied, we don't know. He was like, anything that seems to be working, we're not really sure why. I was like, okay. And then I said, well, like, it seems like there's so little ego around sharing the speaking platform. How did that happen? And he responded something to the effect of, maybe, but there are many things we don't do very well, Jason. And I think this has probably kind of led us to kind of what we say a few times a year, which is to take your time kind of wading into the community, because we will disappoint you. And we're not even trying. It's not on purpose. But as human beings, we will. And if you'll hang in there, there's something even more beautiful on the other side of that. But there's going to be a moment, you know, and a lot of times I'll tell people that, and they're like, oh, that makes me trust you more. I'm like, no, really. Like, I'm not, it's really going to happen. It's a thing. So... And ultimately, though, and that's just because we're all just people on a journey, like doing the best we can with the awareness we have, and we have blind spots. And so one of the things I think that's been healing about experiencing guidance or leadership in this community is the willingness to acknowledge, like, we have edges, and in addition to beauty. And our ultimate desire and goal is to learn to kind of invite one another to actually connect with God's guidance in our lives, and not just, you know, a leader or something like that. Today we're going to lean into a scripture that's often used as a source of comfort. It's often spoken at funerals. It's one of the more well-known scriptures in the Bible. And what's interesting is that our passage today actually has more to do with how we live out our days. And my hope is that we'll kind of reflect today on these experiences of being guided and maybe be open to this question. What does it mean to return to God's guidance throughout our life journey? So if you would, I'll invite you to read aloud together from Psalm 23, as is our custom. So really, this whole passage is summarized in the very first line, the very first verse. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And the rest of the song is kind of explaining what that means. And the question that kind of came up for me this week is, what has our songwriter experienced that has led them to choose God as a guide, as the guide of their life? What does it mean to not be in want or to have a sense of enough? And we'll kind of start there today with this first of two questions. How can we live out of enough? It starts off saying, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want," which is also translated as, "I shall not be lacking or become scarce." I think a lot of times we kind of ask that question, is there enough blank for me? Will there be enough? It goes on, it speaks of green pastures, still waters, right paths to be walked. It talks about going through the darkest valley and heading toward this great meal where everyone is invited. You get the sense that the psalmist is on a journey, as we all are, and they're not focused on like locking down certain guarantees, but trusting that there's going to be enough as we travel. And then it culminates with this beautiful verse, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long." Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me, or that's better translated, pursue me. Oftentimes our songwriters in other psalms, they would sing of enemies pursuing them to do them harm. So you would have this kind of sense, it makes sense they would ask the question, is there enough, right? Or will I survive? And yet throughout this person's life journey, there's also a sense that God is pursuing them. And it says, surely, or better translated, is only with goodness and mercy. It's pretty amazing. Every day, each day, the questions come to each of us, I think, in some form. Is there enough food? Is there enough money? Is there enough opportunity? Is there enough acceptance? Is there enough love? And the psalmist has had an experience that they come back to and they say, oh, that's right, yes, there is, there is. It says, I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. Dwell also means to return. It's another way the Hebrew can be translated there, to the house or the presence of God my whole life long. I will keep returning to the presence of one who is only bringing me goodness and mercy. That kind of makes sense, right? So what brings us in contact with something deeper and bigger than our kind of little self-made realities? What connects us with enough? So one of my spiritual care practices this year is I got a movie pass. I don't know if y'all know what those are. Okay, people will laugh. Yeah, I heard a whistle. All right. So it's like, essentially, if you see at least 10 movies in the year, it pays for itself. So I'm well on my way. The problem is budgeting for food and popcorn, but anyway, we can talk about that later. So this has been one of my kind of spiritual care, self-care practices. One of my experiences of green pastures. And recently I watched a movie, that was really challenging to watch, but also kind of wrecked me in a good way. So I want to just show a little trailer of the movie.
כאן פוקסטרוט, כביש סטרילי. אני חוזר, הכביש סטרילי עבור.
נמצאים בכל מקום. תצפיתים עלינו, עוקבים אחרינו.
אבל במלחמה כמו במלחמה, ואנחנו פה במלחמה שלא יהיה לאף אחד ספק.
רימון!
אז הבנת מה שאמרתי לך?
Natürlich habe ich dich verstanden.
Mein Freund, ich habe dich verstanden. בסוף נתהפך ונשקע.
נלחם בלא נודע. בשביל איזה תכלית?
יודע שפוקסטרוט זה בעצם ריקוד?
לאן שלא תלכי. את תמיד תסיימי באותה נקודת התחלה.
So I still don't know what the camel means. If you know, don't tell me. I'm kind of like letting it work on me. So when I watch this, like, I really don't a lot of times have a real intimate connection when I hear news of like what's happening in Israel and Palestine. But when I watch this story of parents losing a son, I thought, oh, like, I get that. My boy's about to head off to college. And he's, you know, going to be moving on this summer, which is a great thing. I'm really happy for you. But I'm having some feelings, you know, about this. And it was really clear to me through this experience. It was like God was giving me a way to process some of my emotions. My experience was leading me to a place of still waters to kind of process. So that kind of, for me, brings up this question of how do we allow ourselves to be led into green pastures? How do I notice when I'm being led into these renewing spaces in our lives? And I think sometimes we have certain formulas of, you know, this is what it looks like. You know, if I do this, this, and this, this is like the right answer. So one of the questions I began to kind of ask, and I ask when I journey with people, is where do I sense the flow of grace right now in my life? And where do I sense an absence of grace right now? And often we'll use this when I journey with people. I think just this week I met with two different pastors in different places. Maybe it was three. And they were all like trying to read the Bible in 2 years. And it had become totally lifeless, by the way. And I was like, why are you still doing it? You know? And it was like, it's like, I know, like I would tell other people, you don't have to do this. But it was like they were just caught in a formula, if that makes sense. It wasn't actually giving them life. And so just asking the question, well, where do you sense grace? You know, one of them said, well, through kayaking right now, you know. And another one said, you know, I like to listen, like Lectio, listening to the scriptures being read. And so this is kind of a way to not necessarily just pick a formula, but let it be unique to what's going on in your journey. I'll offer one other thing as we look at recognizing spaces of green pastures. In my work as a spiritual director, a lot of times we set these really great spiritual goals. See if I've got one more slide up there for that. Yeah. And so I think sometimes we get frustrated when we can't meet our goals, you know, whether it's exercise, reading, walking, diet. And so I kind of started to talk in terms of like different tiers of self-care or intention. And so when we have like a lot of resources, I think we have more freedom to choose what we really want to do. Like I can exercise when I want. I can pray, meditate. I can connect with people. I can sleep, maybe. Again, these may not all apply, but I'm able to choose my intentions more clearly. Most of us live more in like a tier 2 to 3 a lot of the time. And under seasons of stress, I think the self-care we can access is a little bit less than what we would like. And I think part of grace is actually embracing that care is still valid, if that makes sense, even if it doesn't look that impressive. Okay, so some of mine include like binge-watching shows, treating yourself, ice cream, benign distractions. So these are things that are not overtly harmful, but you wouldn't like put them on your spiritual resume to see, yeah, look how awesome I am right now. But I think they're still valuable. And sometimes grace is giving credit for the little bit of that we can do, if that makes sense. And then I think tier 3, when we get totally overexhausted or overwhelmed, this is where I find myself being more judgmental of myself and others. We see more addictive things like porn, drugs, excessive alcohol. Maybe I give all of who I am to systems of work and others and hope God will meet my needs. This is where I see more indulgence, entitlement in myself. Like, I work so hard, I deserve this, fill in the blank. And what helps, I think where there's grace in this is just realizing when I find myself doing things I don't really understand or I'm not really proud of, to be able to just say, oh, you know what, I wonder if I'm just really exhausted right now. Like, it doesn't mean I'm a terrible person. It just means I'm really, really tired. And this is my clumsy attempt to try to meet my needs with God, and it's not that pretty. Okay? So I don't know if that's helpful. If not, feel free to ignore it. But this is kind of a way, I think, to think about the connection between what's happening in our life and our ability to access green pastures at times. And so for our psalmist, who is returning continually, these experiences of plenty were intimately connected with God as shepherd. So the second question I want to look at is, what does it look like to experience God guiding us? The Lord is my shepherd. I don't know if you ever had like a Bible that had like pages, but back in the there used there still are some. So back in the day, would do every now and then you do this thing like called Bible roulette almost, where you're just like, if you're really stressed out, you just kind of close your eyes and let the Bible fall open. You know, maybe God will like bring the thing you need. Has anybody ever done that? Okay. We need like an app for this. Like you get like three tries, you know? Nope. Okay, that one. So one time I did this and Psalm 23 opened up and I started to read it and it said, "The Lord is my shepherd." And I just stopped because that was what I needed to remember. So something has been experienced that leads this person to trust God. There's been, and not just in a cognitive way, like they've received something. There's been a transmission of God's Spirit. Our faith is about a relationship in which we are emptied of fear and we end up with a sense of enough. There have been green pastures, still waters, a soul restored. It says he leads me in right paths for his name's sake. So this speaks of paths that have been that have these like worn ruts by the wheels of ox carts. So the right paths are really about how we walk these paths. There's an imprint within the path that shows us where to walk. It shows us which paths are trustworthy. Our understanding of when we talk about God's righteousness or right path is when we live out of a sense that we are loved rather than doing things in order to be loved or earn love. You can't add anything or take anything away from your loveliness right now as you sit here. Of course, we try. And when we get tired enough, we begin to wander and maybe relax into this path that's been worn for us. So we're invited to walk the paths as a loved person, to find the rut of love within each step. And it says that this honors who God really is. It speaks well of God's name. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. In situations of actual danger or threat of harm, this person has touched a deeper reality that violence cannot take from her or him. This is not an idea. It's not just a mental trick. Like, there's been something, some reception of God's presence and guidance. It allows this person to know they're going to be okay. When we really live, also, we don't fear death nearly as much. So what's also interesting, though, is that many times we live in fear of things that aren't actually a present danger. Have you found that to be true? Like trying to go to bed, you think about a situation and your anxiety, or you hear maybe a sound, right? And you think, oh, is there someone trying to get in? One of mine is that I want people to like me. And I've really learned over time I can't control that, it turns out. So a lot of times in conversations, I'm pretty clumsy. Like, you know how you don't know the thing to say and you try to say something and then you spend a lot of time wondering, why did I say that thing? And it's like my brain can get in a loop around that, like something bad is going to happen because of how clumsy I was. But I know, another part of me knows, like probably no one's upset enough to go out of their way to harm me. But in that moment, I'm just caught like in that loop. And in recent months, I've really had this sense, like, it's okay if I'm clumsy. Like, people will probably, most of the time, give me the benefit of the doubt. Maybe not all the time. And even if they don't, probably nothing terrible will happen. And that's been really helpful because that's a little bit of like a relational valley. It says that God is preparing a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Not only do you not have to avoid those you don't like, or we don't like, or who don't like us, but someday we'll be so secure in God's presence that we can sit down with them at a meal and be blessed and filled. Such is the reality of the person who knows that goodness and mercy are chasing after them. The person whose touch point resonates with these words, I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. I will return to God's presence throughout this journey I'm on, today, tomorrow, the next day, again and again. And when we seek God's presence, when we seek truth, it's really hard to tell where we'll end up. Like, God's goodness is often not the thing we think we need. It would be easy to read this and think, great, I'll get everything I want. And yet, I think if we're honest, what we realize is sometimes we start off seeking something that's good, and then the goodness we end up with is really different. This week, I have a kind of a neat story to share. When I was preparing for this sermon, I was looking for images, and one of the images I found is entitled The Valley of the Shadow of Death. Which is another way to translate the part of our scripture today, the darkest valley. And this is a photo taken, it's one of the earliest war photos taken in 1855. And I don't know if you can see, there's like these cannonballs on the road in the picture there. I found out there was a Radio Lab episode about this photo, but it actually ended up being about a filmmaker who was trying to figure out if this photo was real or not. So I've got a couple clips that we'll listen to. This is Errol Morris.
Hi, is this Errol Morris?
I think it's me.
Hello, this is Jad from Radio Lab.
Hi, thank you for your very, very nice but somewhat disturbing email.
What disturbed you in the email?
The term truth fascist.
You called Errol Morris a truth fascist? What were you thinking?
I wrote him an email to try and get him to come talk to us. And I don't know why I use that.
What is a truth fascist?
That was meant lovingly, I should say.
Ah!
Wasn't exactly the right choice of words. Fundamentalist?
Oh, I like it!
But really what I meant is, like, this is a guy who's always trying to get to the bottom of things. He's made all these documentaries, Thin Blue Line.
Oh, yeah.
Got a guy off death row, actually, yes, in A Thin Blue Line. He made The Fog of War.
He made Vernon, Florida.
Yeah, but I contacted him because, you know, I'd recently seen him give this talk about this one investigation of his that for me is like the purest example of the thing that drives him, the thing that's in all of his films, this desire, relentless desire to figure things out, to get to
truth.
We've got one more clip, I think, too. Yeah.
And then he went home with no answer to his question, only that continuing
irritation.
But he was like, no.
No.
Not done yet.
Look, when you investigate anything, I don't care what it is, whether it's a Fenton photograph or Abu Ghraib, or the Murrah Vidalis police officer. Yes, complications result. Thinking causes complications, I'm sorry. But it's part of that process that we go through of trying to figure out what's out there in the world, what really happened. This is about truth. Absolute truth. And the pursuit of truth properly considered shouldn't stop short of insanity.
So you get a little bit of his framework. So Morris, he starts out to investigate whether this photo is actually a staged photo or not. And he discovers there's a set of two. So this is the second photo he discovers, where you can see that the cannonballs aren't in the road. They're now in the ditch. And so he's asking the question, which one was taken first, essentially. And he spends like weeks trying to figure this out. So he talks to like five different historians. He spends hours like going A, B, kind of flipping back and forth between the photos to see if there'll be like a clue. And he ends up going to Crimea, where this actually happened. So he goes there, and then he finds someone to help him find the place where the photo was taken. And then he borrows cannonballs from a history museum and stages the photo and tries to kind of recreate it. And then he still doesn't know. He still doesn't figure it out. And then he comes home, and it's not until he comes home and he talks with a friend that he begins to discover the answer. And yet, even after he discovers the answer, it all shifts for him. The whole question, the good that he started out seeking is not the good that actually finds him. So let's take a listen to this last part.
Do I really care whether he put the cannonballs on the road or not?
Well,
I hope so.
I hope you do.
I hope you do.
Don't you?
I do and I don't.
Really?
Why would you go through all this then?
I guess this is what I take from it. In flipping back and forth between those two photographs.
Flip.
He says you see the rocks move.
Flip.
And when you see the rocks move.
Flip.
You imagine feet kicking those rocks.
Flip.
And when you imagine feet.
Flip.
Kicking those rocks.
Flip.
You feel.
Flip.
The soldiers walking.
Like, really feel it.
You feel them hitting into the rocks. You feel, on some deep sense for me, the reality of that scene in a way that I would not have felt otherwise. It's almost as if you've walked through a pinhole camera into the past. That world in which the photograph, that strange, temporal, evanescent world in which we live is gone.
But if you can step between these photographs, you are permitted a brief trespass into something that you thought was lost.
Yes. My father died when I was 2 years old. And perhaps the deepest, one of the deepest mysteries of my life, who was he? Here are all these photographs around the house. I was very, very young. I have no memories of him. There's a mystery about this man who is central to my life in so many ways, but who I don't know. And who I never will know.
Yeah, it's a little sad. Yeah, it's pretty amazing, right? Like to go through all of that, to try to seek that answer, to go across the whole world only to end up back in his living room, kind of pondering the mystery of his relationship with his dad, a person who affected him deeply, who he never really knew. I think we often seek one goodness only to be discovered by a deeper goodness, seeking our healing and wholeness in ways we barely understand. Our experiences of God are not in our control, and they bring us things we cannot predict. So I wonder this week if we could try to leave some space to let go of a little bit of that control, to return to God's presence, maybe through living into a question. I was thinking of some questions that might be meaningful And just to pick one and not try to answer it, not try to do anything about it, just to ask it maybe a couple times a day. Some questions that came up as I was thinking about this. What does it mean to live as a loved person? How do I access the reality of enough? What if God really is pursuing me only with goodness and mercy? Then one that came up for me this week is, how can I welcome my emotions and thoughts as God does? That question actually came up for me this week, and I found myself, when I reached for my phone or the radio, like, wait a minute, I'm wondering what I'm thinking and feeling right now before I interrupt it or distract, and just to kind of sit with it for a minute. Because sometimes knowing God as our shepherd starts with us giving up the job ourselves. Like, I really like the idea of trusting there's a God who exists, who's pursuing me with goodness. Like, I really like that. But if I'm honest, when it comes down to it, most of the time, I live as though it's up to me to make it all happen. So if you, like me, struggle to trust a benevolent guide with the details of life, I'd like to invite us to close reading aloud together Psalm 23 that kind of reflects some of these understandings of the Hebrew as well. And I hope that this could be our prayer, maybe a symbol of our intention to move into the ruts of love together this week in our days to come. So if you would, we can pray aloud together this prayer. The Lord is our shepherd. We shall not be in want. He makes us lie down in green pastures. He leads us beside still waters.